It's a Jack and Tom Show Rewind. Now we rewind.
I'm looking at this schedule, and I still come up with 9 wins. I'm a sick man. How do I come up with 9 wins?
I really would like to know how you come up with 9 wins.
I'm on crack. I don't know. I don't know where I come up with this stuff.
This is the Jack and Tom Show on 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, Jack Ebling. Dave Benson in here for Tom on Crack Crawford. And, you know, Angelique wasn't going to let him get away with that. Angelique Shingelis is still holding to 5-7 for the Wolverines. Let's bring in our next guest, Tom Dienert from Rivals.com and a longtime writer with the Sporting News. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Doing good, Jack and Dave. You guys having a good Saturday?
It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah,
so
we're
far.
Talking some college football. Doesn't get any better than that in July. So
I hear you. I wish it was Saturday in September.
Well, you wrote a piece this week talking about Michigan and your expectations. And you're not alone in thinking that they're going to show a dramatic improvement. I think Phil Steele has them at 37, and you have them at number 41.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a little bit of a reach, and you have to obviously project here, given the body of work over 2 years by Rich Rodriguez initially. But again, I don't think it's going to be, by any stretch of the imagination, a 9 or a 10-win year. But, I mean, 7 wins, maybe 8, I don't think it's unrealistic. I really think, guys, the offense is going to make a big leap up, and we saw it get better to a degree last year. But, again, I think it's only going to get better, especially if they settle in at quarterback with either a guy like, obviously, Denard Robinson or Forche. So, again, the $64,000 question, the key factor that obviously is going to determine how great this year is going to be the defense.
Right.
A lot of onus on Greg Robinson, of course, tweaking the system. I guess they're obviously, again, that's the question. Do they have the playmakers on that side of the ball? Can they get the job done? Can they get off the field? Can they generate turnover? So, again, I like to think that they are going to take that leap and at least become an average defense. And again, if they're just an average defense, this is a team that's going to get to a bowl game.
Tom, it's funny that you mentioned, you're talking about the quarterbacks, because me and Jack just wasted some really good radio during the break actually having a good discussion about it. And I'm under the impression, I would like to see Tate Forcier be the guy that it's his job to lose. You know, he went through the growing pains last year and had a good start to the season, maybe got a little tired down the stretch. Jack's under the impression he would like to see Denard Robinson off of what he saw in the spring game.
Right.
I'm kind of wondering which way you're leaning towards from what you've seen.
Well, Dave, I think I would lean toward your option. I would go with Forcier out of the gate, make it his job to lose. He's got the most experience. He's a little more battle-tested. And I would let him go out there and, again, either keep the job or lose it, and then, of course, give Robinson the option. So, again, I just think the fact that he's been through a little bit more of these wars, been through a little bit more of the live action on Saturdays, he'd be the guy I would give the ball to initially coming out of the gate.
Well, he's a guy who did not win a Big Ten game in October or November, and watching him in the spring, I just thought he had regressed a little bit. But again, as you say, that experience, that actual game experience, really matters. And Tom, there are a lot of people in Ann Arbor who say that whichever one of them wins the job, they're keeping the seat warm for Devin Gardner a year from now.
Yeah, nice array of talent they're starting to assemble there. And, you know, push comes to shove, Gardner, Denard Robinson, he seems so much like some of the quarterbacks. Obviously, Rodriguez had great success with at West Virginia.
Right.
So, again, I just think that the fact they had this competition, we know everything in life, guys. If you're selling insurance, writing stories, playing quarterback at Michigan, competition makes everybody better.
Right.
Keeps you on your toes. So it's just going to be a healthy environment for the team to benefit from these guys having to really fight for the job.
Talking about the Big Ten as a whole, are there any players you see coming in this year that haven't really made a name for themselves yet in the conference that are going to have a breakout season?
I think maybe keep your eye on the quarterback at Illinois. There's this Nathan Shielhouse.
Right.
He's in the Kansas City area. He's been already dubbed the starter by Ron Zook. Jacob Terrest, who started a few games last year, has transferred already. So he's the guy that's going to replace Juice Williams. And you know, he may be the most important guy in Ron Zook's life. I mean, it's no secret there could potentially be a short leash there. Though I still think talking to people around that program, even talking to some of their media guys, you know, I go on Warren Tate's show sometimes.
Sure.
And he always tells me that he really thinks, you know, Zook's probably going to get back for the 2011 season. But anything short of a total bottoming out this year, you know, they've invested so much money into that coaching staff. Now they went out and hired Paul Petrino as offensive coordinator, and Vic Coney as defensive coordinator. paying those guys $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 and you have multiple year deals. So bottom line, it'd be awfully expensive to get rid of Zook and that staff after this year. And again, Nathan Shieldhouse, the quarterback, could go a long way toward making any or erasing any doubt in the mind of Ron Gunther whether he should keep Ron Zook or not.
The player I think is going to be most interesting to watch, Tom, and I think that a lot of Big Ten fans may not be familiar with what he's capable of doing, but certainly the people at Purdue right now are pretty excited about Robert Marv coming in.
Oh, yeah, Robert Marv, no doubt about it. The transfer from Miami sat out last year. I did a story with him a month or so ago, and, you know, from all reports I got when he was down in Coral Gables, he had a little bit of swagger to him, maybe a little feeling of entitlement. Ran afoul of some team rules on and off the field, wasn't the greatest student. But he really seems to seem very contrite to me. He's really done all the right things during the whole course of last year when he sat out. So, again, all systems go. This guy was Mr. Florida in football coming out of Plant City High School in Tampa, a tremendous talent, dual-threat quarterback. And if he's as good as people think he is, you know, Purdue has a chance to at least be a middle-of-the-pack Big Ten team that could exceed a lot of people's expectations.
I want to talk about a team that actually has Purdue on their schedule, and that's Notre Dame bringing in Brian Kelly, who I'm a Central Michigan grad. I saw firsthand what Brian Kelly can do to a team, even a poor program like Central Michigan. I'm a big believer that he's going to turn them around right away. What's your feelings on Brian Kelly and how quickly you think he can get it turned around at Notre Dame?
I feel the same way. I think he's everything, you know, Charlie Weiss was, and that's a tremendous college football coach. College being the word underlined and circled with my red Sharpie. You know, this guy, is again, I love it because he's paid his dues. This guy came up through the backwaters, Grand Valley State, you know, Central Michigan, Cincinnati, now Notre Dame. He's not Lane Kiffin, who was born on third base and, you know, thinks he hit a triple to get there. This is the guy who knows how to coach, has had to get by without the best resources, without the best talent, knows how to maximize his talent, knows how to put his talent in position to win. You put those things together now at a program like Notre Dame with all the bells and whistles, I think it's going to be a home run success. Now, you look at their schedule, I still think it may just be an 8-win team this year. They're going to have to adapt the offense to a degree, see if Dane Chris can really run that offense, make those snap decisions, get rid of the ball quickly. Defense, though, like Michigan guys, that's going to be the operative word in South Bend and really determine whether Notre Dame's just a 7 or 8-win team or whether they really have a big breakout in Kelly's first year.
Tom, how do you see Notre Dame doing against Michigan in South Bend and against Michigan State in East Lansing?
Yeah, talk about two big games. I mean, for all three of the programs, more so Michigan and Notre Dame. But even Michigan State, what, 6-7 last year, guys? So
yeah.
Just a huge game. And I'd be hard-pressed to be back in the corner and have to pick a winner right now without seeing any of these teams coming out of the gate. You know, I guess I'm a guy who always likes defense, and I think about the defenses at all three schools, and none of the three defenses, to me, would have a great edge over either of the other schools. Then I think you always look at the teams with the best quarterbacks of those three schools, and I guess right now you have to go with Michigan State. So, you know, Spartans have their issues. They have their warts on offense. I mean, Cousins looks like a good quarterback, but that's not a Mark Antonio offense, you guys know. They just didn't run the football very effectively at all last year. So, at this point, having even said all that, maybe Michigan State's a team that may be slightly better at this point than even a Notre Dame and a Michigan at this point. But again, I just don't see much discernible difference between that trio.
You know, it's interesting when people talk about Michigan State and the ground game, and it certainly looked like they couldn't run it at all when they had to. But they averaged almost a yard per carry more than they did with Javon Ringer.
Yeah, but I think their leading rusher last year had like 423 yards or something. I
mean, they didn't try to run the ball very much.
Yeah, I mean, they won. They got to a bowl game. I guess that's the bottom line as a coach. You do what your team can do well. You don't force them to do something that they can't do just because that's your style as a coach. So you give credit to the coaching staff for doing that. And you got to think D'Antoni's got to maximize that roster.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they did do what they did best, though, last year. I mean, I thought Caper was a solid running back towards the end of the year. I thought they could have done a running back by committee type of
block
offense.
They couldn't block for him.
Yeah,
it wasn't the running back.
You know, well, the line's been an issue, it seems like, since D'Antonio's been up there. And everybody's told me that when John L. was up there, that offensive line really fell into a lot of disarray, a lot of recruiting misses, just a lot of misevaluations. Guys didn't develop, injuries, whatever. But the offensive line was one area that ended up being a total disaster.
Yeah.
But I would have thought by this stage of D'Antonio's tenure, most of those problems in the line would have been patched up by now.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to patch some this year. Last year they were actually pretty good as pass blockers, but they couldn't open a hole for any of us, so that's for sure. When we talk about the situation on defense, you mentioned and we talked about which player was going to be the biggest surprise. Which player from the Big Ten is going to be missed the most, Tom, from last year?
Let me run through my head here real quick. The player missed the most. Well, I think it's got to be this Darrell Clark, the Penn State quarterback, without a doubt. I mean, I think two-time first-team All-Big Ten choice. I think he's the most efficient quarterback in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And plus, he's a leader. I mean, the intangible factor is there for Clark as well. It's just going to be a huge void for Penn State. One of the biggest reasons why I think they drop off from we have Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa. Then I see a big drop-off to the next group of teams where I have, like, Penn State and like Michigan State. So, again, Darrell Clark's going to be the guy I miss most. They got to get a quarterback. Some people say it's going to be the sophomore Kevin Newsom. Some people think this true freshman T.J. Jones, who they say is like Donovan McNabb, could be the guy. So just a lot of questions under center. And again, Darrell Clark to me is going to be the most missed Big Ten player.
What about Brandon Graham? Do you think that Michigan's going to miss him, or do you think – obviously they're going to miss him. Obviously they're going to miss him. But do you think that Michigan has – I mean, everybody – that I've read in these preview magazines seems to think Michigan's going to be a pretty solid defense this year. And without Brandon Graham, I'm not sure that I see that.
Yeah, I mean, he was such a playmaker as far as you know, the tackles for loss and getting pressure on the quarterback. I think a linebacking core has a chance to be okay. I think Jonas Mouton's got to have a big year. Too bad Warren, I guess, went pro early in the secondary. But still, the line, I think the front seven as a whole could be all right. I mean, you're right, there doesn't seem to be any apparent great playmaker like a Brandon Graham there at this point. But I get the feeling from, again, the people I talk to, they should be okay. And I'm supposed to talk to Coach Rodriguez this week. I talked to David Brandon last week for a story I'm working on for Michigan, so I'll try to get into his head a little bit more on the defensive side of the ball, since, again, like we said earlier, that's going to be the real key for Michigan this year.
I assume you have Ohio State winning the conference?
You got to. It'll be six in a row, guys. First time since they did it in the mid-70s, and they went like from 72 to 77, which would tie their own record. Again, Ohio State, but again, don't discount Wisconsin and Iowa. I believe Ohio State has to go to both of those venues this year, if I'm not mistaken. So, again, don't discount Wisconsin. And Iowa has a lot to like on both those teams. Wisconsin's got 10 starters back on offense. They got some issues on defense in front seven. But, again, the schedule looks pretty good. And then Iowa, of course, is Iowa. Going to be a tremendous defense. You guys, that front seven, that defensive line is as good as Ohio State's. And offensively, they don't do anything fancy. But their quarterback standees back, their receivers, they got three running backs. I mean, those are going to be two teams breathing down Ohio State's neck that could just as well win it, too.
Tom Dienhardt from Rivals.com, our guest. Tom, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Hey, enjoy it for having me. Thanks, guys. Be good.
Okay. We'll be right back with more. Jack Ebling here with Dave Benton, The Jack and Tom Show, 1320 WILS.